Yes, Sound Studio is at a prime.
What is happening? Have you been kicked to the basement? You've been told you can't stay up here.
If you're ever redesigning a building and somebody suggests that open space and no doors is a great idea, that's not a good idea.
Okay.
So we have no doors on any of our offices, and several of them, including mine, are actually very open. We only have 6-foot walls, and so there's like 4 people in my pod with 4-foot walls, and then there's 4 people in the next pod. They also 6-foot walls, and there's 2 in the next one, and so like I can't do anything there. We have a conference room, but that was already checked out by somebody else. Now there's an upper classroom and a lower classroom, and both of those are occupied. So I'm like, it was either the equipment storage or come down into the basement. So I'm in the basement. Hi, Lisa.
What's happening?
I was deep into a text, and then my volume is all the way up, and I heard Chris's voice. I jumped out of my skin.
Tripped out of your... Fuck. I just welcomed to my new office. This is...
It's nice.
Ugh. The computer is sitting on top of a chest freezer. I'm sitting on top of a cooler. I had to unplug the refrigerator to my right because it made too much noise.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Well, this is a very entertaining start.
How are you two lovely people?
I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm the most relaxed of the group, it seems. There was no rushing.
Did you see me jump?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I pushed let in, and I just saw you jump. Chris was doing it. I just saw you like pop and then start giggling. So,
I wrote in our little document there a couple of ideas for today. Phil, you put me in charge, right?
You're in charge. You're in charge today.
Oh yeah, that's right. Ooh,
this is the Chris day.
I also want to note that I'm no longer a friendly voice.
Oh,
you got
I did see
a friendly
that.
Voice.
You're now Lisa. Oh, you added your last name. Oh, and now Chris, you're only Chris, and I'm only
Phil. Just Chris.
Now it really. We can't change
Am
that.
Am I ever going to get it right?
No. Maybe we're wrong, though, at this point. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's a helpful reframe.
This reminds me of, what's that activity? Negotiation squares.
Yes, negotiation squares.
So next time, we just have to commit to changing. See,
see if we can all be the same thing.
If we can all be the exact same thing.
What do I say? How do I do the intro? Like, if I'm in charge, I got to know what to say.
You just go with the gut.
Well, welcome to Vertical Playpen.
I never say that.
No,
that's a good start. Yes, you do. What?
Just going to riff on this. I love it. Okay. So yeah, welcome to Vertical Playpen. Very excited to be back for another episode. I am Chris Ortiz. And as Phil has said earlier, if you know me, you don't need an introduction. But a lot of my friends got a real good big kick out of that, by the way, when I played that clip. With me today, as always, is Phil and Lisa. And we are excited to dig into another character and some more concepts within the bear that we are excited to tie to. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Based on that, we're excited.
This is the part where I say you can cut that and then you don't cut it. I
mean,
I'm
not cutting it.
Yeah, so we're going to dig into, specifically today, the character Tina. And looking at some of the social dynamics going on with Tina. And I think she's a pretty interesting character for us to explore and talk about because she goes through a pretty, pretty dynamic shift. And I think I mentioned in an earlier episode that, like in Ted Lasso, when Ted says that Roy's the first domino that needs to fall is in that man's heart. I feel like that was Tina in this. And that's sort of the way I perceive her, is like the first person that Carmi and Sid have to win over to this new system and things. But she's a very intriguing character. And again, lots of spoilers ahead. So beware. Yeah. So I'm curious, maybe I'll kick it off with a quick question to the two of you. For me, I was watching it. There's a couple of little hallmark moments, some key moments when you see Tina make incremental shifts in her perspective and sort of that sort of thing. So I'm curious if you noticed any of those, what kind of dynamics were happening, interactions. I do recognize that, like, when we say Tina did this, it's the actor portraying Tina was fantastic in the way that she showed the emotion and the shift in emotion of that character. I really recognize that these actors and actresses, like, just really wonderful at portraying these emotions and these social dynamics that we're picking up on. And I think that's why they won so many Emmys.
Emmys.
Yeah. What are some of the key moments that you all saw with regard to Tina and that shift?
So for me, I think I was talking to someone recently about, because they'd used the phrase like, when we work with groups who are resistant, we have to create buy-in. I just asked them like, okay, what do you mean when you say buy-in? Like, how do you create buy-in? Just, it feels like one of those phrases that you just use. Like we use the phrase like read your group. And I'm like, oh, what does that actually mean though? And I think about that with like the term buy-in. But what there's a specific, I think, moment where you're right. She's the first domino, and then it does change the dynamic for other people to be more acceptant of, specifically, I think, Sid as she comes in. And there's like moments that the buy-in is created just through, it's almost like constant battering down of the walls of Tina's facade of like, we're not trying to get rid of you. You're not, your job isn't on the line. And I think she tries some of Sid's food, or there's those moments where it's like, oh yeah, this is good. There's positivity here. And then I think that that's where the sort of buy-in comes from. There's like moments where the apron changes, like those are kind of like where she's willing to like swap into the new apron. But I think like the first moment where you realize that that's the character you need to create buy-in for would be that moment when she says, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. That those kind of topics, I think, come up a lot in our industry. There's always this like energy around resistance. Like you walk into a space and you can tell the person you want to try to win over. If that happens, that will change the dynamic. I think the term buy-in for me stands out when I think of Tina.
Me too. And I think as I think about working with groups in a training or facilitated environment, like we both, all three of us have done so much, it is not that difficult to identify, oh, here's the person not only that needs buy-in, but also is so influential that if this person can endorse a process, it means other people will. And what I think about in the character Tina, especially in season one, is that she was not won over by a lot of explaining and convincing. So I think the question back to you two is then what was it? And what does that look like in our work? Because a lot of times I have felt like, well, giving data doesn't shift. It doesn't promote that change. And so I would start off by suggesting she had to internally experience that this method is going to make my job easier. So she had to go along with it with resistance and then have her own shift. And I'm just reminded of how ineffective the process of trying to convince somebody with data can really be.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think that there's an interesting dynamic to your point. There's a loyalty in Tina to Richie and to Mikey from before. And so some of her resistance, even to Carmi in the beginning where she hides his knife because he touched the pot that she was, you know, her pot, like there's this resistance there. There's this loyalty that she has to an old piece. So I think I really appreciated that loyalty element. And one of the key moments, like while I thought Tina was the one who needed to be won over, I feel like Ibrahim is one of the keys to making that happen. Because he compliments Sid at some point in like episode 4, he gives Sid a compliment to Tina. And Tina kind of like, you can see her almost react to that. Like, oh, wait, this person I love and trust is looking positively at this person right now who I see as my enemy. What are they seeing that I'm not seeing? So there's an interesting like tipping point there. That was like the first little nudge in that episode in particular.
There's something I just remembered, that there's a moment that it's interesting because I wonder if we do it when we're training, or the notion of allowing people to fail or highlighting failure. So early on, there's a scene where Sydney's introducing new things, and there's something that, like, Tina's in charge of making mashed potato. She says, do you remember the recipe? And I think that Tina says, did you remember I told you to F off? Like, there's a very like combative moment because she doesn't want to highlight that she might fail. And then she overboils the potatoes and she turns and Sid has already started making a new set of mashed potatoes, almost to like highlight that she knew she was going to fail. I think about technical trainings that I've led where I've allowed people to make the mistake rather than like, because Sid could have just told her then that you're going to fail, but I think she knew she was going to fail and then just wanted her to experience failure. But I don't know if that's necessarily positive or a positive moment in Tina's experience or necessary. I don't know. How do we deal with, like, from a leadership perspective, allow our people to fail in that moment like that?
Well, I think this connects what you asked earlier, Lisa, to part of the thing that I think helps win over Tina is that Sid almost refuses to engage at the same level that Tina is trying to instigate. Like, she does a little bit where she's like, I know you speak English, you know, like, and she kind of pushes back a little bit at the beginning. But during these cooking moments, she doesn't engage in the argument in the same way that Tina is. So Tina lashes out against Sid. She talks, that's when she says, like, you know, I've been here since before you were born. But she kind of keeps her cool and doesn't, she communicates through all that and really doesn't engage in that. And then soon after, that's when we hear that compliment from Ibrahim. And so I do think that when you're trying to, like, win over somebody into that system, somebody who's a little reticent, a little bit reserved from that, refusing to engage in what they expect from you, like, the leaders, they're going to expect resistance from the leadership and to be forced into something, because that will feed their resistance, because I'm forcefully resisting you, and that's going to feed that engine and that energy. But if you don't engage and you sort of just continue, and as you said, like, creating a safe place for her to fail and see how there might be another way without throwing it in her face, without being told you so and those kinds of things, just... that's what Sid does in that space. And I think that's something that in our training pieces, when you have somebody who's been doing things a certain way for their whole careers, and we're trying to show them a new way or a different way or an updated way of doing things, and there's resistance, it's just continuing to invite them to explore this new way without telling them they're wrong and that what they've been doing is wrong. Because that's where their ego is tied in, right? I mean, I think we see this with I used to talk about challenge course vendors about like this all the time, as many of our challenge course vendors were one person operations. It's really hard to not have your ego and yourself tied into your business, because you built that business from scratch. It is your baby. And so when an industry is telling you you have to change something, we're just telling you have to change a business practice, but because that's my business and that's my ego, you're telling me I have to change. It's not my company. And so that's, I think, it's trying to find a way to get people to separate that a little bit safely.
Yeah. And there's so many behaviors that I know, for me, talk about ego. The more I dig in to, like, no, I'm right, I think that there are behaviors that can come from the outside that make it easier for me to then start to turn around. And one of those behaviors is not somebody standing there saying, I told you so, but really let me discover for myself that if I make this change, it's going to make my life easier, whether that's in the way that we belay or facilitate, what have you. Another big theme I'd love to bring up, and I think Tina represents, I don't think that she is the instigator of this theme, is around kind of a power of moments thing around what happens to people in life and our work when they are clearly being invested in the right tool, the right resource, the right professional development, and how that can then become the cycle of refeeding engagement and passion for whatever the art is. And the two examples I'm thinking of in The Bear is when Carmi lets Tina use his knife, how amazing that feels for her to have the right tool. And then there's a whole theme about having the right cookware later when they're trying to open the restaurant. And then her being sent to this class, and she doesn't in the show reflect on what does this mean for me. But to me, it was so apparent how energizing that was, and also good for business to have a person who has current training on how to use the right tools. Did you all see that? And how would you pick up those threads?
Yeah, there's an element of giving people the tools they need to lean into their strengths and where they are. I think for Tina's arc, there's these moments where Sid invites her into more responsibilities, more roles. I mean, essentially in season two, she offers her the job of the Sioux, which we can see separately, but they clearly didn't have that communication together. that Tina would love to do that because Sid is so, outside the restaurant. They're like, she's so nervous to ask her if she wants to do it. And meanwhile, like Tina's almost jumping up and down like, yes, yes, you're really going to ask me this? Yes, I'm going to, yeah, I want to do that. And it's like this giving them the tools that they need in order to explore a strength. And for Tina, she's discovering strengths. It was a job before. And now she realized, wait, I'm actually pretty good at this. So Carmi giving her that knife, first she thinks she's borrowing it. And so she's using this great tool and seeing, wow, I have a passion for this. And then when she tries to give it back to him, he's like, no, that's yours. And just the like, oh, the pride that she has this valuable tool. And I think that I use this story relatively often with my students, and it goes to Ryan McCormick, just that like back in the early days when he was doing all of his graphics work for High Five, he was doing it at home because he had a better computer to do all that. And so at some point, High Five decided, we decided, let's invest in the right tools so that this guy can do the work that he wants to do with the right tools here. I only use that because we talk about strengths a lot with my leadership development students, just leaning into strengths and finding ways to give people what they need in order to excel in that area.
I totally agree with that, Chris. And I think the other piece, hearing you share that back, is that there's a specificity to it. It wasn't just this random tool, like, yeah, here's a nice pot. It was, this is for you for this purpose. And it's like she's being seen. And I think that there's that piece around individual support. I know I've been so blessed in my career to, I could be in Tina's position of having so many resources. Like this is, like High Five said, Lisa, we see that you're interested in learning more about DISC and we want to invest in you getting this certification because it will help me grow, but then I will turn around and that will be a benefit to everyone at High Five, for example. So I feel like the knife thing for Tina might be for me is taking that class in DISC because it, you know, there's a financial investment to it. But what that does is that it raises the bar for everyone because I can then use that investment to help my peers. And I think that's a great learning around investing in those tools, but the specificity of it is really important. It's not everyone gets the same thing. It's that knife was for Tina for that reason. And that class was for Tina, not for everybody.
I think it redefines professional development. I think sometimes like when we consider professional development, it's like a first aid class that comes in and we do a first aid cert, right? Like that might, oh, we did some professional development, but like this is much more individualized. In fact, that happens across the board in that show, right? Like pretty much every character, every member of the team gets sent off to different things specifically to their job, but also specifically to things that I think that Carmi notices, or maybe Sid notices, that they have strengths in that could be developed upon. This microphone is a reality of that for me too. So, you know, it was an investment that an organization puts, not just, you know, it's for the individual, allows them to grow, but it's also beneficial to the others.
Did that cut out for everybody else?
Yeah, Phil just froze.
Frozen. I don't know what you said there with the mic. It was right after you said microphone. It just disappears.
And how ironic that you're talking about. I invested in this really great microphone. And,
well,
then
it just, you just, nothing.
But yeah, I said stuff and it will have been recorded and then I'll keep all the other stuff. It was great.
All right. Excellent. Good, good.
Your reactions were better than the information I shared.
Yeah. So I think another thing we can maybe explore with Tina is just of that relationship to other characters as well. They send Ibrahim and Tina to the cooking classes for professional development. And this is something you can see in Tina. And I think this is very relatable to our audiences here with training. You're seeing one member of the training extremely excited, diving right in and excelling and being complimented by the instructors in the course. And then you have Ibrahim, who looks like a deer in headlights. He's just petrified of change and the uniform, and he doesn't want any of it. And he feels like, I see Ibrahim trying to put on the chef uniform, like us trying to put on a harness to somebody who is very nervous about being up on the ropes course. Like there's a similar thing. And it's Tina who learns to facilitate bringing him back in, because he essentially quits at some point during season two. And it isn't until right near the end that she starts to rope him back in. It almost facilitates his re-entry and helps him like re-enter the business on his own terms with his own skills and his own role. So I think that's really unique and connected to a bit of the work that we do, where you see somebody who both given the same opportunity, but how many times have we got into staff trainings and one of the staff members is just petrified of heights? And here they are hired for a job where they're supposed to spend 40, you know, half of their day working at 40 feet in the air, and they're just petrified of that. And so can we help them find a role that fits their comfort and ability and all those sorts of things? Even Phil, I think in other episodes you've talked about, did you talk about nervousness about being at heights in the beginning and how that sort of worked through that? But yeah, something interesting. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on connections between the work that we do in that setting and sort of how it plays out for these characters.
And I think to zoom it back out, and I know that we're specifically not talking about sort of leadership as an overall theme, so I may be taking us into an unintendedly different direction. I think that it's a great reminder that leadership looks like so many different things. And there is nobody, I'm going to say this as a rough draft, I'm pretty sure I mean it. There's nobody in that kitchen who is not a leader, in terms of how they influence the outcome, how they influence each other. So yeah, at the beginning, Tina's not, she doesn't have a title, right? I mean, that has sort of leadership in the title. And yet she is so important to the rest of the dynamic, bringing Ibrahim back in. And it's a fascinating reminder that leadership can be so much about how we influence other people and not just about how we get things done. Right. I think, I mean, that's a very, I know you both understand that deeply, but I hadn't really thought about that till now, like how important leadership is in this example for Tina, but I think it does apply to everybody else.
I talk a lot about leadership versus management in my class, and there's that, and Simon Sinek has a great video where he sort of alludes to this in one of his famous TED Talks, but management is the title that you have. Carmi is the executive chef, Sid is the sous chef, like that's the titles. But the leadership of the beef is clearly in when the show starts is Sid in a lot of ways, and Richie, and like the people without the title. It reminds me of back working with the Bruins, honestly, with some of the things that they were talking to us about, where they had their captains and their captains had the titles, but a lot of the leadership was coming from the more charismatic personalities on that team and maybe not directing them in the right direction. And so how do you shift or get those people on board, those people who do have the leadership power, even though they might not have the title, to buy into the system? I think that's kind of what this we're seeing in the kitchen, is that the new leadership by title is trying to figure out how to win over the actual leadership in the kitchen dynamic, social dynamic.
I think that takes an organization to have some level of bravery to allow individuals to follow where their strengths are rather than deciding where they should be. I think that what we see early on with Tina especially is she's resistant to the change because she's worried she'll lose her job. And I think that the same with Ibrahim. That's why when they both go to that class, he stares, you know, steps away. He doesn't feel he's able to hit the bar that he's expected to hit. So rather than be fired, he's like, I'll take control in my own hands and leave. And it takes Tina to bring him back to say, like, no, you still have strength and value to the organization. We just changed the parameter of what that is and allow you to have the sandwich shop on the side, but it's still beneficial to the organization. But I can't imagine many organizations have that ability to be able to follow individual strengths for the better of the greater good. And I think that, like, what I think I see demonstrated really well the transition between the beef and the bear is that they're able to follow each individual person and say, this is where your strength lies. You're still valuable to the organization. We're not getting rid of you. We're just changing the parameters of your work.
I think I don't want to repeat exactly what you just said, but it makes me think about this. In the show, I did not pick up on this, maybe you two did, where all these characters have their own professional development in our language. Marcus goes to Amsterdam, Tina and Ibrahim go to this class. And at no point did I hear an expectation of what they should be able to do as a result of that investment. That's what you're talking about, right? And I didn't really thought about that until this moment. What is it like to be sent? It's like the recognition that I'm worthy of PD,
but without the pressure of coming back to perform a task that I didn't create for myself. And I think that's an interesting nuance. Yeah, that's just an interesting difference, Phil, that I had not thought about. They don't have to go back and sort of prove this is what I learned, but they do deeply. And maybe it's because part of it's on their own terms.
Well, I wonder as well if like the lack of pressure actually allows them to follow their passions and be more excited about it. Because I've had people come to trainings who I know that if they fail or do something, they lose their jobs. But then there's other people who are being sent there as a learning opportunity, and I see them grow and flourish in a slightly different way. Like the end goal of the PD, if it's very explicitly like this, you're doing this because we need to spend the money because we've been told to spend the money, versus like we're just sending these people because we think this is a value to the organization. It completely changes because Tina really comes back with a new lease of life and passion and excitement. And that's a hugely valuable emotional range that she now has. If she'd been sent somewhere and resented the idea of being sent and came back and was like, all right, I had to do this, that wouldn't have positively affected the organization, the restaurant. It's just a side note. Maybe a conclusion portion, and then we'll be able to pause.
No pressure, Chris, but if you could just wrap this up in a masterful summary.
A masterful summary. And I want it to elicit deep emotions, leave with inspiration and a teaser for the next episode.
No pressure here, and all off the cuff. And so I didn't know this is what I was signing on to when I decided I'd guest host an episode.
Really, hosting is facilitating.
It really is. That's good. No, I think it's really interesting. Tina's character, for me, when we look at story arcs connected to our work, she has this unique story arc in which we see a lot of parallels in the work that we do with reticent participants in programs or trainings, but also within leadership of an organization. A lot of what I'm doing is leadership development work, and I think she's a storybook character of a leadership development arc of going from somebody who had the leadership of the kitchen, but from a more of a social standpoint, not an official standpoint. She didn't have that title, and we see her slowly earn the official title of that, where she becomes the Sue. I mean, that in the bear, she will have the title and the influence in the kitchen. And so I think that that's a really interesting transition of a character in that story arc that we're seeing in there. And I think it models a lot of what we wish or hope for some of the organizations that we work with. And when we're working with these organizations and we're trying to help them navigate change and bring things around for themselves, then modeling some of the things that you see in the bear with meeting people where they are. There's a moment too for Tina. I think there's this beauty in that Sid and Carmi allow Tina to be authentically herself. They're not forcing her into a new system. They're saying we're changing, but they're not throwing her mistakes in her face. They're just continually allowing these opportunities for her growth. And then as she starts to get won over, she starts to bring other people with her. She has a very poignant conversation with Richie as well and starts to bring him over because he's one of the last ones I feel like who buys in. And I feel like Tina was also instrumental in getting him on board. So we often look at an organization and see the leaders as the executive director, the director, or whatever that might be, which is the Carmis and the Sids in the show. There are the informal leaders who are really the ones behind the scenes creating that change in the organization, helping people navigate that. And I think that's Tina in a lot of ways.
I'm going to read a quote. You just referenced the interaction with Richie, so I wanted to pull up the quote. So it was in season one, episode six, says, "You need to get out of here. You're effing my up." I'll read it and I can beat myself. "You need to get out of here. You're effing my up. My game has improved 300% in 2 months. This place is organized and clean and smooth. I love Mikey. You know how much I love that kid, but this is alive and good."
That's it.
That's it, right?
That's it.
Great way to end.
Wait, do I do the close out to like...
You have to do the close.
I have to do the... So thank you all for going on this journey of exploring the bear through this lens of team dynamics and the work that we do. Can't wait for the next episode. So thank you for listening to the Vertical Playpen. Hatha the Fatha guy.
Thanks for listening to Vertical Playpen.
And then what about thanks for listening to High Fives Podcast?
Can you do it?
Okay, try.
Thanks for giving us a good class, guys.